Tonight's shiur, we're going to discuss the minig of salt and honey on Rosh Hashanah. And for that, we're first going to have to go into a little bit of a background check about why we use salt during the rest of the year, and why there were those that were makbin not to use salt on Rosh Hashanah and only to use honey. So let's start just one by one. We'll begin like this. The Rama writes in Aruch Chaim, Siman Kuf Samach Zayin Sif Hei, Mitzvah Lahaniach Melach Al HaShulchan Kodem Sheyivtza. The Rama writes there is a mitzvah to put salt on the table before one cuts the challah. Ki ha-shulchan domel ha-mizbeach, ma-ha-achila ke-karbon. The Rama tells us that the shulchan is considered something which is domel ha-mizbeach. A person's table where he eats is considered like the mizbeach. We find this concept already. The Shaar HaTzion over there quotes in the Achronim that since one's table is like the mizbeach, therefore one is not allowed to kill any bugs on the table. The same way on the mizbeach, one is never allowed to kill. Shvichas dam is asur, and asur la'arvo kina, it's asur to kill any animals on the mizbeach. I'm sorry, obviously other than the karbana. So too, says the Shaar HaTzion, one should be careful never to kill any bugs on the table. So that's the question that some later achronim raise. Well, what about if I have a mosquito that's just bothering me? You know, what am I supposed to do? I have an ant on the table, a cockroach, so it's better to kill it than to have it ruin the whole meal. Okay, but basically the idea is that our Hashulchan extends it as well. A person should never put a dover ma'os, a disgusting, a despicable item on the table because the Shulchan is domel l'mizbeach. That's what the Magen Avraham writes. This is also the reason why we have the minig to cover over the six reasons are given in the various Achronim, but to cover over the knives at the time of Birchas HaMazon. So the most famous reason that the Mishneh Berurah quotes and other Achronim quote as well is because there was once a big tzaddik who got to Boni Yerushalayim and he stabbed himself because he was so angry, he was so upset about the fact that there's no Yerushalayim, so therefore we have the minhag to cover over the knives or take them off of the table. The Magen Avraham says the reason why is because, simply because the Shulchan is domel l'mizbeach, and on the mizbeach you're not allowed to have any barzel. That's the pasuk in Parshas Yisro, that one is not allowed to take any iron or metal and put it on the mizbeach, so therefore we follow that and we take off the knives during benching. So Shabbos is a big discussion. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about it. Shabbos is a discussion depending on which reason you believe in. Then Shabbos is going to be a question whether or not you have to take it off. The Pashas is that even Shabbos you have to take the knives off the table as well by the time that we bench. That's what we assume. They say from the... one reason that they say is because there was someone who was so upset by Boni Yerushalayim, he killed himself. So because of that, we take it off. Other reasons that the Magen Avraham says is because the Mizbeach, the Shulchan is domel l'mizbeach. So therefore, since on the mizbeach we're not allowed to have any metal items, because like the Gemara says, that metal is mekatzer yamu v'shnosav shel adam. A sword is made out of metal, and usually that's what takes away a person's life, and the mizbeach is mayrech yamu v'shnosav. The mizbeach is the thing that gives us longevity, it gives us a long life, so therefore we assume that you should never have metal together with the mizbeach. So too, if you're on the table, that's what the Magen Avraham quotes, the halacha, this is why we take the knives off the table. They say from the Rav Shitzer that he used to tell his Hasidim that the Mishnah says in Zvachim Daf Memvav Amud Beis that when a person shechts a carbon on the Mizbeach, he has to have six things in mind. Says the Gemara, you have to have in mind L'shem Nizbach, L'shem Zevach, L'shem Hashem, L'shem Ishim, L'shem Reach, L'shem Nichoach. That's what it says. You have to have six things in mind when the Kohen is offering the carbon on the Mizbeach. He has to have six kavanas in mind. Who he's bringing it for, who it's going to, what exactly is going to happen with this carbon. You have to think about what you're doing. So to the Rav Shitzer said, when a person sits down to eat a meal, since the Shulchan is domel l'mizbeach, you don't just eat hefker, you don't just eat like a wild human being. A person has to think before he eats, what am I eating? Why am I eating? It's l'shem shamayim. Am I going to make a bracha? Am I know what I'm doing? Am I serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly or not? So that's... you're saying, why the knife only by Berachas HaMazon? Yeah, so it's an interesting point.
You covered before.
Right. It's an interesting point. It's a good point. Right, everything was off. And then you just brought up the dead animals to the mizbeach. Correct. Yeah, so there's a lot of discussion about the knives. Maybe we'll have a separate shiur on that once. But I'm just pointing out that the Magen Avraham quotes that this is the reason, the official reason the Magen Avraham says on Shulchan Aruch, why we take the knives off. Along those same lines, the Kaf HaChaim writes that when we bring the salt to the table, as we said, the Rama points out that this is why we bring the salt onto the table, because the Shulchan is domel l'mizbeach, and al kol karbancha takriv melech. In Parsha Shmini, we're told that on all the karbanos that one offers, not only a karban of an animal, but also a karban of a mincha, also needs to be salted. You see from here, just parenthetically, you see from here that the salting is not to get the blood out. The salting has to be just a separate halacha, because if it was to get the blood out, then why would I salt a karban mincha? Right? So that's what you see very clearly from that Pasuk. But basically, the Kaf HaChaim points out that because we're supposed to bring the salt to the table, says the Kaf HaChaim that really it's better for the woman to bring it to the table to be mechaper on Ishto Shalot, that she didn't give salt when the neighbors asked her to borrow some salt. Okay, so we have this minig. It's important to point out that the Chok Yaakov writes in Hilchas Pesach that when it comes to Lel HaSeder and we dip the karpas into the salt water, so over there we assume that a person is supposed to first dip the karpas into the salt water and only then make the Bar Priya Adam. Right? Is that what everybody does? That's what we're supposed to do. So whether everybody does it or not, now is not the confession time. But basically, the Chok Yaakov says that although over there, that is the minig, that everybody first dips it in and then makes the Bar Priya Adama, the reason being because we don't want to make a hefsik in between the bracha and the eating, so therefore we dip it in order not to make any extra hefsik at all. So over here he points out that we put the salt on after we cut the challah. It's going to be a hefsik. We should do the same as by karpa. So he says no, because when it comes to cutting the challah, the mitzvah is to make the bracha on the shlema. The mitzvah is to make the bracha on the most chash of a piece of bread. So it's more chashuv if I have a full loaf of bread in front of me, not if I cut it into slices. So since it's full at the time, I can't salt each piece. I can only salt it after it's cut. So he says, therefore, although by Pesach night, we generally are makbid to first dip the karpas into the salt water and only then make the bar priya adama, when it comes to eating challah, we first make the hamotzi lechem and haaretz, and then we go ahead and we cut the challah and dip it into the salt. Just something to keep in mind, an interesting idea. So Tosis writes in Brachas on Daf Mem Amar Aleph. That's number two. Oh, okay. Number one was there, that Ramah. Number two is the Tosis in Brachas Daf Mem. So Tosis writes, Anu ein nogim lahavi melach al ha-shulcham izman hazeh. Tosis says, nowadays we don't have the practice to bring salt to the table. Why? To pas shalanu chashuva. Says Tosis, because we have good bread. We buy bread in a bakery or we make our own fresh bread. So there's no reason to have salt. So Tosis is assuming in his opening line here, his assumption is that the whole point of the bread is just to make the bread, the whole point of the salt is just to make the bread taste a little better. There's no other reason to have salt. So then Tosis says, Mi Rabbeinu Menachem haya makbid lahavi melach al ha-shulchan. He says there was one great tzaddik, this Rabbeinu Menachem, who was one of the Balei HaTosis, so he had the minig, he had the custom to bring salt to the table, although our bread is delicious, although our bread is edible without the salt, still Rabbeinu Menachem had the custom to bring the salt to the table. Anyway, al derech mashar matzina b'medrish, that k'shei Yisrael yoshim al ha-shulchan, when Jewish people sit down to eat a meal, mamtinim zeh al zeh, and they're waiting for each other, ad sheyidlu yadeim, until everyone finishes washing, v'heim below mitzvahs, and at the time they can't do anything, they can't speak and learning, means to say the rest of the meal you're supposed to be doing that, hasata mekatrig aleim, v'hamelech megin aleim. Says Tosfos, yes, he quotes Rabbeinu Menachem that although we have delicious tasting bread, and although the bread is homemade and everything's great, and we don't really need the salt to make it taste better, we still have the minhag to put it on the table. Why? Because this is supposed to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash of the Karbanos, and at a time when we're pretty much stuck without doing any mitzvahs because we're waiting for everybody to finish washing, so therefore we're supposed to have the salt at the time. So that's one big nafkamina, whether what is the reason for the salt. Is the reason for the salt because we just want the bread to taste better, that we're making motzi on, we want it to taste better, or is it that we want that there should be a schus at the table? So that's one nafkamina, bizman hazeh, when we have very good bread, should we have to bring salt to the table? A second nafkamina is, what if a person doesn't have salt? Can you bring sugar? Is sugar good enough? So if you assume that the whole point of putting the salt on the table is simply, like Tosfos says, to make the bread taste better, no, so a little bit sugar never hurt anybody. To dip the salt, to dip the challah in the sugar is okay. But if you assume that the whole idea is to remind us of the hakravas hakavanas on the mizbeach, so then sugar wouldn't work. Yes, although we have some strange achronim, right? I'm not calling the achronim strange, but you can find some strange opinions in the achronim that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when there was a mitzvah to put salt on the mizbeach, so the Shalom Eishev quotes and the Har Tzvi quotes and others, they quote some strange opinions that sugar was just as good as salt. Okay, it's a strange idea. It's not the way we pass in the halacha. We assume absolutely not. Salt is salt. You're only allowed to salt the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to bring sugar on the mizbeach. But, so we assume that this would be another nafkamina. If you assume the whole point of the salt by the table is only to make the pas, to make the bread taste a little better, so then one would be able to substitute the salt with sugar. But if you assume that the salt is to remind us of the karbanos, so then the sugar would not suffice. So what about on Lel HaSeder, Lel Pesach? Should a person use salt on his matzah, or should a person just eat the matzah as is? So the Mechaber writes in Siman Tov Ayin Hey, if you look at number 3, says the Mechaber, on Pesach night yivarech hamotzi v'al achilas matzah. Person first made the hamotzi lechem in haaretz, then he makes the al achilas matzah, v'yitabel hamatzah b'melach, and he should dip his matzah in salt. The same way the rest of the year we dip the challah in the salt, So too on Pesach night. Zok the Rama, no. Ein haminig letabel matzah b'melach b'layla harishona de pas naki ein sarach melach. Okay, says the Rama in minig Ashkenaz is that we don't dip the matzah in the salt. They quote in the Archos Rabbeinu that the stipler did not put salt on the table at all on Pesach night. He said we're just going to have the matzah as is. So the Mishnah Brura writes, why is this a concern? Why does the Rama say we shouldn't have salt on the matzahs on Leil HaSeder? What's the problem? Says the Mishnah Brura, because it says lechem oni. And if we're going to spice up the matzahs too much, we're going to put some salt, sprinkle on it, so then it's not going to be lechem oni anymore. So later Achronim point out that that's very questionable, because don't we find that the Mishnah says the quintessential ani is the one who sits there and he eats his bread and salt? That's the way we always describe an ani. Pas v'melech tochal. The same way the Mishnah says in the beginning of Brachas, Misha, Sha'ani, Nichnas, Lachal, Pita, Bemelach, when the Ani sits down to dip his bread in the salt. That's the way that an Ani always eats. That's the way a poor man eats. That's the greatest way to show Lachem Oni. So how can you say that the reason for the Rama not to dip the matzah in the salt is because we want it to be Lachem Oni, and if you put salt on it, it won't be an Ani? It's very strange to assume that way. So in fact, if you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, and in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, my father always quotes this as well, that this was the simple understanding that he had without the Mishnah Brura, that the reason why the Rama says we should not, bedavka, don't put salt on the matzahs, is because it's a bizayin to the matzahs. Because we're supposed to show we love the matzahs so much, they're so delicious, we don't need any salt. We don't need salt to spice up the matzahs. Mm-hmm. The matzah shel mitzah that we're about to eat are so good, we don't need any salt. And therefore the Chassam Sofer writes as well, in the Minhagei Chassam Sofer, they quote, that on Friday night and Shabbos day, the Chassam Sofer never used to bring salt to the table, because he said we shouldn't put salt on the table at a time when we're having the delicious challahs of Shabbos. Let's show HaKadosh Baruch Hu how much we're happy about eating them, the challahs, eating the matzahs. It's covered to the challahs, to the matzahs, not to put salt in it. We don't need anything extra. It's like we find, you eat at someone's home, and you think the soup is missing a little bit of salt. So it's an insult to the balabasta if you're going to go sit and put salt in it. Correct? Everybody knows that. So the same thing over here. That's what the Achronim write. The Aruch HaShulchan and others write that it doesn't make sense to be zayin to the matzahs if you're going to go ahead and say that the matzahs are not sufficient on their own and they need something to spice them up. So therefore we have the minig not to put salt on Leil Pesach. Now, let's move to the halachas of... Yeah.
You said before the hefsek,
yeah,
washing, so you have the melach, there's going to be no, you know, so mm-hmm, wasting the time. The time that you make the melach of the matzah,
mm-hmm,
and the time that you make the brach of matzah,
yeah,
it's a period of time, you say, break in between. Is that a hefsek? I mean, that could be a long time sometimes if you have 20 people sitting at the table, and by the time you're giving out your demotzi,
yeah,
which you made a motzi on,
yeah,
you're the one that's basically giving out that motzi in pieces.
Right.
Is that a hefsek?
It is, but there's no other... What do you mean? Every Shabbos... Every Shabbos, right? You cut two challahs. By the time you finish cutting, it could be...
It's only about to make another bracha. He doesn't make another bracha between the time.
No, you're supposed to make both brachas right away. You're supposed to make both brachas right away.
The person that's sitting at the other end of the table doesn't have any matzah yet. He's not making...
What do you mean? He's being yotze with me. If I'm the balabas and I'm the one who's running the seder, I make hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz and alachilas matzah for everybody.
And then I
give it out. The same way I would do on a regular Shabbos. I just say two brachas instead of one. Right? Yeah?
My husband prepares the kizaisim before. He makes our motzi. Then he takes and breaks up the...
So it takes less time.
...to everybody. Should sit down and everybody makes their own
also.
Okay.
That's
what
he used to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why that's different than the hamotzi. I don't know why that's any different than the hamotzi. We generally assume that Magen Avraham writes in Hilchos Megillah that Baroiv HaMadras Melech, when you have a lot of people being Mekayim one mitzvah together, best is that one person should make the bracha and be motzi everybody. So I'm not sure why it should be any different between the hamotzi and the alachilas matzah. It could be the Armin Hagim, I don't know. I'm just saying, I think the simple halacha that we generally assume is like the Magen Avraham, that's an Indian of Baroiv HaMadras Melech for one person to do for everybody. Okay, so let's move on a little further. So now, what's the story with the Dvash on Rosh Hashanah? What's going on with that? So that is in number 4. The Rama writes in Siman Tav Kuf Pei Gimel that Hilchos Rosh Hashanah. Yesh Nogin Lechol HaTapuach Masuk B'Dvash. Says the Rama, there are those who have a custom to eat a tapuach, to eat an apple dipped in honey. Ve'omrim Tischadish Aleinu Shana Tova Masuka V'Chei Nogim. Says the Rama, what does it mean V'Chei Nogim? Because he started off, he said, Yesh Nogim, which sounds like there are some far-fetched communities, strange places that they do this. Says the Ramah, no, but you shouldn't be concerned that this is Nichush, that this is an Isser. You should assume that this is the Minhag, this is what we do. So the Shari Tshuva already quotes from the Shavas Yaakov, that the Shavas Yaakov quotes that the way the Minhag was in his times was that they used to take a piece of challah and a piece of apple and dip them both in honey and eat them together. That's the way they used to do it. When they were passing around the challah, they would take an apple with it. The Shavas Yaakov, that was his opinion, but the Shari Tshuva says, as we all know, the Minhag nauadays is, first we eat the amotzi lechem in haaretz, we dip it in honey, and then we pass around an apple later on in the meal, and we make a separate bari pri ha'etz. There's one thing that's important to point out, that although there are many, many simanim that we find, one has to be careful when he's having simanim on Leil Rosh Hashanah, that if he has one of the shivas haminim, for example, many of us eat a rimon, or many of us eat a date, right, a te'ena. So if we eat any of these kinds of simanim that are from the Shivas Haminim, we have to first make a bracha on the Shivas Haminim and not on the apple. Yes, the apple is what Rosh Hashanah is all about, as we all know from preschool, but the Shivas Haminim take precedence in Hilchos Bracha. So if one is going to make a Bari Pri Ha'etz, which in fact we do have to make that bracha because we're not generally going to be eating fruits in the middle of a meal, so this is not Dvarim Habam Machmas HaSuda, we have to make a Bari Pri Ha'etz, but you have to be careful to make the Bari Pri Ha'etz on the Minchashiv, and that is the Shivas Haminim first. So that's what we have to be careful to do as we're having Simanim on Leil Rosh Hashanah. So now, the Mishabura quotes that the B'nai Ashkenaz have this minig to dip the prusa, to dip the piece of challah in Dvash. And the Kaf HaChaim says, well, obviously this goes without saying that we shouldn't forget about the salt. We should keep the salt on the table. But also we should use the honey. We should use the dvash. However, that is the opinion of the Kaf HaChaim. It's a Svardusha Acharon. However, if you look in the Archos Rabbeinu, which is the official biography of the Stipler, so they quote over there that the Chazon Ish, as well as the Stipler, were makbe bedavka not to use salt on Leil Rosh Hashanah. And as well, we find the same idea in the Halicha Shlomo, which is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's Ha'arus on Hilchos Mo'adim, on different things. So over there they write as well, the Rav Shlomo Zalman said not to dip it, bedavka, don't dip the challah on Leil Rosh Hashanah in salt. One should only use honey. And we're going to explain in a few minutes what that is all about. Why is there such an insistence not to use salt? What's it going to hurt anybody? What's the big deal? So you use honey and you use salt. What's the problem? We're going to have a beautiful idea and insight into this. Just we're going to give the following introduction. Is honey kosher in the first place at all? Yes.
If you're saying that shochanism is kosher, yeah. How can you use honey? Honey can never be on the
mizbeach. Mm-hmm. Right? Good hara. So obviously we don't take it so far as to assume that... Right, so that's why some say the Magen Avraham says you only have to do it at the end of the meal, meaning you can't say a person can't eat with a knife. That's ridiculous. Right, so we can't say that we're not allowed to have any foods that taste good because on the Mizbeach we didn't used to eat this kind of food. Well, that's not the din. We assume it's done with the Mizbeach, we have to remind ourselves of the Mizbeach. I'm not sure exactly where we draw the line and at what points we say it should be like the Mizbeach and at what points we say it's not exactly like the Mizbeach. It's a good horror you're making. But now I just want to go... Before we get into this insistence that some of the Gedolei Yisrael from the last generation had on not using bedavka, don't use the salt on Rosh Hashanah night, I first want to discuss whether or not dvash is kosher at all. And that question sounds a little bit strange, but in fact, it's not such a simple idea. The Gemara says in Chulin that we darshan from a pasuk bas hayana. The pasuk says not only is the yana bird treif, but also the bas hayana. So the Gemara darshans from there, Kalayotze min ha'aser is aser. Anything that comes out of a pig, let's say, not only the pig itself is aser, but also if milk comes out of a pig, that's going to be aser. Similarly, if you have a non-kosher bird, if an egg is laid from a non-kosher bird, that also will be considered like the bird itself. So that is what the Gemara darshans in Chulin. It says the Rambam in number 5, in Hilchos Machalos Asuras Paragimel Halacha Alav, Zak the Rambam, Kal Maichalayotze mimin min aminim. If you have an item of food that is the byproduct of an animal, ha'asurim, that is not kosher, shalokin al-achilasan, the kind of animal, the kind of creation that one would get malchus if he ate it, harei oso ha'maychal asur ba'achilam minatar. You're not allowed to eat something that comes out, that's produced by that animal as well. Kagon, chala behema, for example, I'm not allowed to eat the milk that comes from a behema tmeya, v'chaya hatmeya, mubeitze of a dog hatmeya. I'm not allowed to eat the eggs from a non-kosher bird, or from a non-kosher fish, something that comes out of a fish. Shenemar ve'aspasa yana zubei tzasa. Fine. V'hu adin l'chala aser ki yana l'chala advar madom l'beitza. Well, there's a machlekes harishonim whether or not one should get malchus if he goes ahead and he eats an egg that comes from a non-kosher bird, or if he eats the milk from a non-kosher bird, should he get malchus? like if he would eat it, if he would have eaten the animal itself, or do we say, no, it's a lesser aver? But be it as it may, we assume, whether you assume there's malchus or not, there's a special issur that we learn from the pasuk of Basayana, that one is not only usher to eat the animal that's treif itself, but also anything that's a byproduct of that animal. That's the whole question. Why should we assume that a woman's milk is actually kosher? Aye, there's an issur to eat besar adam. Right? What? How do you know the man is treif? So that's a big machlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban in Ksubas Daf Samach Amud Aleph. Should we assume that besar adam is actually treif? Is cannibalism really a problem?
Yitzchak was being brought as an olah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting, right? But that's a big machlokes in the Rishonim. Should we assume that besar adam is treif? If you assume it's treif, then you got a big problem. How is the milk that comes from a woman able to be kosher? That's yotzei min ha'aser. Okay, so that's not for now. But let's go on to a much more fundamental question. The Gemara says in Mechares da vavam abeis, how do we all drink milk all the time? Shouldn't we assume that milk is treif? Why should you assume milk is treif? A simple kasha. Frek the Gemara. The behema is aser. Are you ever allowed to eat a behema before it's shechted? No. It's an isra evim and achai. No, so as the animal is right now, there's an isra evim and achai. Or like Tosis writes in Beitza, it's an isra of enes vucha. Whatever you're going to call it. But basically, the animal is not allowed to be eaten the way it is. So how am I allowed to drink the milk that comes out of an animal? What? So that's the Gemara's kasha. So how is a person ever allowed to drink milk from a cow? A cow is kosher, but right now the way it is, it's treif. You're not allowed to eat it. It's either evim and achai or enes vucha. It's not shechted. So how am I allowed to drink the milk? Says the Gemara, what's the answer to this problem? The pasuk says, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. Since Eretz Yisrael, one of the shvach, one of the great prides that we have in Eretz Yisrael is the fact that Zavas Chalav Udvash, that it has Chalav, milk is flowing in Eretz Yisrael, there's so much of it. So since that is one of the shvachim of Eretz Yisrael, therefore it can't be that milk is something that we're not allowed to eat. From the fact that Eretz Yisrael is described as a place that has so much milk, it must be that milk is kosher. Says the Gemara, it's Gzeres HaKasuk, based on that pasuk. Mm-hmm. That's what the Gemara says. So then the Shach carries on in this kasha and he says, in Siman Pei Zayin, so yes, how is one ever allowed to eat a beitza? How is one ever allowed to eat a egg? It's a yotzei min ha'aser, right? You have to kill the chicken, you're not just allowed to. You have to shech the chicken, so it's Eved Menachai. Same kasha the Gemara has by milk. So frek the shach, that's the same problem we should have by eggs. Have we ever allowed to eat eggs? The eggs aren't laid after the chicken dies. The eggs are laid while the chicken's still alive. Nu, so while the chicken's alive, it's evim achai. So how are we ever allowed to eat it? Zucked the shach, along the same lines of the Gemara, he says, because we find by shiluach hakan, that the pasuk says, v'esab banam tikach loch, after I send away the mother bird, I'm supposed to take the eggs. Nu, so the Torah tells me, go ahead and eat the eggs. Nu, abanam tikach loch. So how can the Torah tell me to do that if eggs are treif? Therefore, says the Shach, that is the whole basis of the heter to eat eggs. An unbelievable Shach. That's what the Shach says. Otherwise, I would have assumed, if we didn't have the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, I would have assumed eggs are treif. The Chassam Sofer picks up on this chiddush of the Shach, and he says, based on this, Taka Goy would not be allowed to eat eggs. Why? Because the Chassam Sofer says, Eved Menachai is an Isser that applies not only for Jews, but also for Goyim. The Goyim don't have a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, so they don't have a heter. The whole heter to eat an egg is only because we have a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan. And in the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, it says, V'sabanam tikach loch, you're allowed to go ahead and eat it. So the guy is an Isser of Eved Menachai, but he doesn't have the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan. So he doesn't have a heter to eat the eggs. Mm-hmm. No. So you go ahead and punish the Goyim. Obviously, no one's going to punish them, but the nafkamina is, if I own a store, and I'm selling treif eggs, am I allowed to sell it to the guy? Is that lifnei iver? Something to think about.
Is it also for Goyim to eat eggs?
The Chassam Sofer has the chiddush. He wants to say that it's also for a goy, because, in fact, there is no heter, because the whole heter is based on Shiloh HaKan. They don't have the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, they only have the isra of Eved Menachai. So, according to that, if I own an egg farm, a treifa egg farm, it's mutter to own such a thing. If I do business in treifa eggs, am I allowed to distribute to a non-Jew, because maybe I'm facilitating him with an isra of Eved Menachai? Yeah?
Well, you're not
allowed
to do business in this sort of food that's
us, or
anyway.
Right. Oh, so for me, so over here it's tricky, because what if I own a kosher egg farm, right? What do you call that?
Kosher egg farm.
Kosher egg farm, is that what it's called? So if you own a kosher egg farm, and I'm a distributor, I'm sending out to Jews and non-Jews alike, am I allowed to do that? Maybe the non-Jews are taka, not allowed to eat kosher eggs?
But I can't say
but then the Gemara said, the problem with all this is, There is a Gemara in Chulin that says, "Mi yikamidi to the Yisrael shari li'akam aser." Can you come up with something that the Goyim have more chumras than the Jews? How could it be? So the question is, in the Rishonim, how do we draw the line? Should we assume that everything that applies to a Jew certainly will be mutter for a non-Jew? That's not so clear. So that's something that you have to deal with when you talk about this some sefer, also not for now, but it's just, all I'm bringing out is that the Gemara raises the question again. The Gemara raised the question, how are we allowed to drink milk? Says the Gemara, this exeris hakasiv, eretz avas chalav udvash. Since Eretz Yisrael, one of the great prides that we have in Eretz Yisrael is the fact that it's zavas chalav udvash, therefore the chalav is mutter. Says the Shach, how is one allowed to eat an egg? So he says also, it's exeris hakasiv because by shiluach hakan it says, v'habanam tikach lach. So now let's go a little further. Ask the Gemara Mechoris, how are we allowed to eat dvash? How are we ever allowed to eat honey? Aye, honey comes from a sheretz. Honey is produced by a bee. You're not allowed to eat a bee. A bee is one of the shrutzim. Right. So honey is produced by a bee. So shouldn't we assume that's a yotzim and a aser? Mm-hmm. Same like everything else. And over here we don't have exeris hakasa. What are you going to say? Is exeris hakasa that you have to eat honey with an apple on Rosh Hashanah? What?
It doesn't come from the bee.
So the Gemara says, there's a big discussion there. How is the honey produced? Sometimes you have bees that actually suck it up and then they excrete it. They produce it. And sometimes you have bees that just carry something from one place to another and then it gets produced. There are two different types of honeys. I remember someone showed me, they looked it up online. There, in fact, nowadays we assume like that. There are two different types of honeys produced by different types of bees. Sometimes you have the bee really puts from its kishkas into the honey and that's what produces the honey. And sometimes you have, note that the honey just is transported by the bee to another place and that's the way it is actually created. So the Gemara has this question. So the Gemara's maskana is, how do we know that honey is mutter? Because the pasuk says, again, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. So since one of the great prides of Eretz Yisrael is that it has dvash, therefore it's mutter. What do you mean? That dvash is talking about dvash tamarim. It's talking about date honey. It's not talking about bees honey. So what are you talking about? So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. The pasuk shot in the pasuk is really referring to date honey, but we have a right to extend it to regular honey from bees as well. Okay, so the whole thing is a chiddush al gabi chiddush. It's a pella from a din. But basically, the Gemara's maskana is that we permit a person to eat honey because of the gzeres hakasav of eretz zavas chalav udvash. Fine. So now we've settled that case. We know that honey is mutter. This Rosh Hashanah, we're going to go ahead and have milk. We're going to go ahead and have honey, and we're going to go ahead and have our eggs. Everything. We're going to do all the dvar hasurim which we hold our mutter based on gzeres hakasav. But now we're back to our original question: why is it that the Stipler, the Chazon Ish, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they're all quoted as saying they have an insistence that we shouldn't dip the challah into the salt, we should only use honey on Rosh Hashanah. What is the big deal? Don't we know there's a great thing that's involved in putting the salt on the table? The reason for the salt on the table is to remind us of the Karbanos, the Shulchan is Darmalim is Beach, like we saw before in Shulchan Aruch. So why do they have such an insistence on Rosh Hashanah night, but Dafka, not to put the salt on the table? What does it kill anybody? What's the problem? So the idea is like this. The idea is like this. Generally, salt is the type of material that's used for a preservative type of process. Right? The salt is what maintains meat and makes sure that the meat doesn't get spoiled. Right? That's what we know. Salt is like that. In fact, I saw Rav Sham Shem Fal Hirsch writes in Parshas Vayikra, when the Pasuk says that you have to put salt on the karbana, so he writes, this is in the Hebrew translation from the German, Shahamelech Mesamel I Hishtanus. He says, salt always means not changing. Right. Salt always means you have the power to maintain and to preserve something. So he says, therefore, shehadavar sagar mikal hashpoz hachitzonius. Once I salt a piece of meat, it's not susceptible to all the changes that could possibly affect this meat and spoil it. Umishum hachi says, Rav Shamsham Falarish, mitzuvan anu limloch kal karbanos b'melech. Why do we have a mitzvah to go ahead and put salt on all the karbanos? L'samol she'ein shinui ba'avodos ha-karbanos. To show the Ribbono Shel Olam that we're doing absolutely everything when it comes to karbanos perfectly, to the T. We do it as you said. We don't add anything. Yes, I think it would be nice to put a cherry on top, to put some frosting on top of the karban. No. I do everything exactly the way the Ribbono Shel Olam said. I think it's nicer to have a kli sharis that's made out of this material and out of that material. It doesn't make a difference. We don't care what we like. We preserve exactly everything the way the mitzvahs, the way the Ribbono Shel Olam told us to do it. And therefore, says Rav Shamsham Val Hirsch, that's the symbolism behind Bedavka using the salt on all the karbanos to show that we do everything the way we were expected to do it and the way we were asked. So, the sugya writes in Avodah Zarah. We have a sugya over there that talks about a person buying dvash, buying honey from a non-Jew. Is one permitted to buy honey from a non-Jew? The same question that we have by Chalav Akum. Is a person allowed to purchase milk from a non-Jew? Should we assume that the non-Jew put something in? Says the Gemara, we are allowed to purchase honey from a non-Jew. Aye, maybe the non-Jew put some trefa pieces of meat into the honey. So what's the answer?
It changes.
What's the answer? Say the Rishonim, the Rush quotes, that the answer is, this is based on that Gemara there, the answer basically is that even if the guy did throw some trefa ingredients into the honey has such qualities, the honey is so potent that it's able to totally transform anything that falls into it. So therefore, even if the guy threw non-kosher items into the honey, we still have the right to buy it from him because by now, everything turns into kosher honey. Similarly, the Rush writes that although honey is a very sticky type of material, and the ragle hadvorim, very often the bee's legs get stuck in there. So that's treif, that's shratzim. So how am I allowed to eat honey? We should always assume that there's pieces of the bee that get stuck in the honey. Says the Rush, quoting Rabbeinu Yonah, no, because the honey has such a power. The honey is the type of material that's able to transform anything and turn it into honey as well. So therefore, says Rabbeinu Yonah, quoted in the Rush, that is why we are allowed to eat the honey, number one, although the guy made it and maybe he threw in treif things, still the treif things have turned into kosher. And although every time a bee makes honey, there's always going to be some particles of trefus that fall into it, the ragli advarim, the legs of the bee. So therefore, it would still be mutter, says the Rush, because we assume that the honey is able to take everything over, and the properties of the item that fell in get totally pushed aside, and they turn into honey themselves. So therefore, on Rosh Hashanah, we come to Rosh Hashanah and we tell the Rabbanu Shalom, all year long, we acted a certain way, now we're ready for a change. We did tshuva, we're holding in a different place. I'm a bar yachadash, I'm a new person. Salt is the preservative. We don't want salt on the table. Mm-hmm. Don't show the Rabbanu Shalom you're the same. Don't show him like Rav Shamshon Fall Hirsch writes that there's an ihishtanus that we're not willing to change. No. Take the honey. The honey is what shows us that there's such an idea of something totally being transformative. We get involved in a certain process and it totally transforms any davar ha'asr that may have fell in. That's what the Gemara tells us by a dvash. That's why we're allowed to buy it from a nachri. That's why the Rush says we're allowed to eat the dvash although it has ragli advarim, because the properties of honey are totally transformative. So when we come to Rosh Hashanah, this is what we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. Believe that we're able to transform ourselves, that we can become new people because we have done tshuva and we want to start over, we want to be new. We don't want to have salt on the table. That's the insistence of these Acharonim, I assume. This is why they insisted, B'davka, not to have the salt on the table on Rosh Hashanah night, to show we don't want the salt to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of what we used to be like, of the static nature that we led our lives. We want to show them that we're ready to change ourselves, we're ready to transform. But let's take it a step further. Anyone can leave, it's okay. Let's take it a step further. The Chafetz Chaim, that was for anyone. I'll talk to myself. The Chafetz Chaim writes a beautiful insight in his opening Hakdama to the Likutei Halachos on Kadshim. The Chafetz Chaim writes that when you look in the Psukim and Tehillim, we're told that the Torah is considered Mesukim Midvash Venofes Tzufim. Says the Chafetz Chaim, it's the same idea. Because Dvash is a transformative type of material. That's what we find in this Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, when it comes to learning Torah as well, person who begins to get involved in learning, that will transform him. It will make him into a completely new person, and will be able to change his ways and make everything incredibly different for him from here on in. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. That's why the Torah is Nimshel LeDvash, because it's a transformative type of mindset that a person is supposed to have when he gets involved in learning Torah. But says Rabbi Yashiv in his Ha'aros, in Becharis Dav Zayin Amabez, he writes a beautiful point picking up on this Chafetz Chaim. He takes it a step further and he says, but why is the Torah considered Mesukim Midvash? Why is the Torah even better than honey? He says, it's like honey. Same way honey is able to transform something and take over the properties of that individual item that fell in. So the Torah is the same way. Why is Torah Mesukim Midvash? What's better about the Torah than the Dvash itself? So says Rabbi Yashiv, just with a little Hakdama to what he says, the Gemara writes in Baba Basar Dav Gimel Amabez, that Hurdus, Harasha, after Hurdus killed a lot of the Beis Hashmonai, so it says he took a beautiful girl from the Beis Hashmonai and he was hitman osa bedvash, sheva shanim, right? The Gemara says he wanted to preserve this girl, so he put this beautiful girl, this beautiful Jewish girl, in honey, and that was the way he preserved her for 7 years. So all the Rishonim asked, the Rashba asked in the Tshuva, what do you mean? Didn't we just say in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that honey is able to be transformative? Anything that falls into the honey will be taken over and turn into honey itself. So how can you say Hurdus went out of his way? He wanted to preserve the girl. He wanted to preserve her beautiful body, her beautiful image. So he went ahead and he stuck her into the honey? It's backwards. I don't understand. That's the Rashba's kasha. What? So the Rashba answer is that there's a difference. If small pieces of Ragli HaDvarim fall in, if you have Dvash that just has little things that fall into it, so then the Dvash can take it over. If you have a Beri Yishlema, if you have a complete item that falls into the Dvash, you have a complete person that falls into the Dvash, the honey doesn't have enough power to take over the properties of that whole item, of that whole individual person, and turn it into Dvash as well. Therefore says the Rashba, that's why Hurdus, when he wanted to preserve the girl, she was complete, she was a full body. So he stuck her into the honey because the honey was able to preserve. Yes, sometimes the honey is able to transform something and turn it into honey, but if it's a Beri Yishlema, if it's a complete item, if it has properties completely of its own, and it's a circuit in and of itself, then we assume that the Dvash does not have the power, the potency to actually take over that item. It can only take over parts of an individual item. So therefore, Rabbi Yashiv writes that that's why the Torah is Mesukim Midvash. You're right. The Dvash itself cannot take over a Beri Yishlema, but if a person gets involved in learning himself, it could take over even a Beri Yishlema. The Torah is Mesukim Midvash. It's more powerful, it's more potent than the Dvash itself. The Torah can take over an entire personality, even if he's rotten through and through. Once he starts getting involved in learning, he can already change himself so much. So the Bali Musar point out, so if this is in fact the case, why do we find so many people that are learning that just don't change at all? Why do we find so many people that are interested? They ask, we ask for everything. When it comes down to it, we don't see the person change. What do you mean? Dvash is of transformative nature. And we're saying that the Torah is Mesukim in Dvash. It's even more powerful than the Dvash itself. So if that's true, so how come it doesn't work? So they point out, the story is told about Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, that when Rav Shmuel Rozovsky used to say over that Rav Shimon Shkop told him when he was learning in Balazhin by the Netziv, so he said he came to yeshiva one day, one night he was learning late at night, and the Netziv walked in, 3 o'clock in the morning. And Rav Shimon was sitting there, he was stuck on a Rashbam and Baba Basra, a very tough Rashbam, he couldn't figure it out. So Rav Shimon walked over to the Netziv, the Rosh Hashiva, and he says, "New Rosh Hashiva, can you help me out with this Rashbam? You know, I've been stuck on this for a few hours already." Netziv says to him, he says, "My Bini Yakiri," he says, "my dear son, ala Rashbam hazeh, on this Rashbam, kvar hayisi kama pa'amim ala kvarim shal hagdolim lehispalel, she'ezke lahavin es devarav." Says the Netziv, "You're coming over to me, you say I should explain you pshat in this Rashbam? You know how many times I went to Kivrei Avos to go ask them to help me for Siyata Deshmaya and understanding this Rashbam?" So the Bali Musar point out, from this story, Rav Shimon pointed out, that basically we go and we're Mespala, we want a Refuah, we want a Parnasa, we want certain things. Yes, we'll pull out the Kivrei Avos, we'll pull out our strong cards when we need them, but who would ever go to actually be Mespala for a learning, for something that he doesn't understand, he wants to become a bigger Talmud Chacham, who does that? How much do we actually care about it? That's what Reb Shimon was saying, that yes, the Netziv told him, you want to really become a Talmud Chacham, you want to know, really, pshat in this Rashbam, it's not so easy. You don't just go and ask someone else. It's not the way it works. You have to really be mispala for it. You have to really want it. I just want to end with the Chafetz Chaim. He writes a beautiful story. Chafetz Chaim says, pshat in the Pasuk, it says, kechui machan dvarim v'shuvu el Hashem. So it's talking about Shuvah, it's talking about this time of the year. So basically, the Chafetz Chaim says a beautiful mashal to explain this, and he says about the wealthy man was walking down the street one day, and a poor, unsuccessful individual stops him in the street, and he says, "You know, finally I came up with an idea, a business venture, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to do it, it's going to be successful, and I'm ready, I'm going to buy, I'm going to sell, I'm going to distribute everything, it's going to run a whole business." He says, "The only problem is I just don't have capital, so would you mind investing in me, just so I could get off the ground?" He says, "Absolutely, meet me tomorrow morning in my office, 10 o'clock, we'll discuss it, and we'll get your business off the ground, I'll be able to invest in you, you just have to explain me a little more of the details." So, the next morning, the businessman has a meeting at 9, and he rushes out of his meeting, he says, "You know, I feel bad, I made up to meet with this Ani at 10 o'clock, I gotta be there, I'm sorry." So he walks out, goes to his office to wait for the Ani. Ani is nowhere to be found. Waiting, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, goes on his lunch break. As he's walking down the street to go to the restaurant, he bumps into none other than the Ani. So the Ani walks over to him, he says, "You know, I have this idea, I've been a Lo Yitzchak my whole life, but I just came up with this idea. I'm going to buy, I'm going to sell, distribute this, that, I'm going to have a whole business. The problem is I just don't have capital." He says, "What, are you kidding me?" He says, "Yeah, what do you mean?" He says, "We made up you were going to meet me 10 o'clock in the morning. What happened? I canceled another meeting so I should meet with you." He says, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I couldn't make it. Things came up and I was busy dreaming." So he says, "Okay, I'm not impressed, but you know what? Tomorrow morning I'll give you another chance. Come 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Come to my office, we'll discuss it. I'll be happy to invest in you if I'm convinced of the idea." So, the next morning, comes 10 o'clock to the office, and rich man is standing there, and 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, nowhere to be found. The Ani is nowhere near the office. Finally, he goes out to his lunch break again. Yet again, he bumps into the Ani. Ani starts going through, chazaring the whole story, telling him, "Oh, he wants him to invest in him." Same thing happens a few days in a row. Finally, the wealthy man says to him, you're obviously not serious about what you're talking about. Why? Because you talk and you talk and you talk, but when it comes down to it, what are you doing for it? I make up a time to meet with you. If you were really serious, if really your situation was as serious and as dire as you're making it out to be, you would make sure to follow through on your words. You don't just say things and then not follow through. If you really cared about it, you would do what you said you would do. So therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's what it means also. Kichui machan dvarim v'shuvu al Hashem. You want to know, he says, it's not about taking the Musar Sefer. It's not about learning the Arachas Tzadik and learning the Mesilas Yesharim. You want to know the greatest way to do tshuva? He says, just take your own words. You ask the Ribbono Shel Olam every single day. The same Bilibenu, Lahavanu Lahaskul Lashmar Lilmud Alam. If you say, V'niya Nachnu V'tzetza, and you make so many bakashas that you want to become a Talmud Chacham, that you want to become more Abbas Hashem, more Yiras Hashem, you want to be more involved with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, those are your words. Do you follow through? The Rebbeinu Shalom made up to meet you at 10 o'clock. Do you come? What do you do after davening is over? That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. Do we want that our own words? Take your own words, the Chafetz Chaim says. You don't have to go somewhere else. Don't read it in a sefer. Take your own words and just internalize them and see, do you really mean them seriously? Do you really want it? That, says the Chafetz Chaim, is the strongest way to do tshuva for a person to remember. Take your own words to heart. Take them seriously and understand what your mission has to be and what you're going to do to follow up with those words. One last thing, when it comes to this idea of the dvash, when we describe this concept of dvash being a transformative material and of that kind of nature that it can actually change something, they say from the Chabina Rav, a beautiful vart, that the Medrash Rabbah writes in Vayikra, Kol Talmud Chacham She'en Bo Deya, that's number 6. Any Talmud Chacham that doesn't have Deya, Afilu Nevela Tov Ha'imenu. Even a piece of Nevela, treif a piece of meat is better than him. So what does that mean? What does that mean? We've all met Talmidei Chacham who don't have brains, right? Who just don't have common sense, right? Everybody's come across such people. So you say, okay, he's not living in this world, he's a little bit absent-minded, he's a little this, okay, but I feel Nevela Tov Ha'imenu, a piece of meat is better than him, a treif a piece of meat. That's the way we describe him. Why do we talk about such a person like that? Said the Chabina Rav, because the Gemara says, in Avodah Zarah, why is one allowed to eat dvash? Aye, we should be concerned that maybe the Nachri, maybe the guy threw in a piece of Nevela. Says the Gemara, because even if the Nachri threw in a treif a piece of meat, a piece of Nevela, still the dvash can overtake that piece of Nevela and turn it into dvash itself. It can turn it into honey. Therefore, says the Chabina Rav, a Talmud Chacham who gets involved in learning, and through all his experiences in learning, through all that he's doing, through all his Avos Hashem, through all his Yiras Hashem, it doesn't transform him. He's the same Nar. He's the same person, She'ein Bo Deya, as he was from day one. I feel a Nevela to have him. Even a piece of meat is better than him. A treif a piece of meat that the guy throws into the dvash, even that can change. Even that can be transformed. That can turn into dvash itself. What's with this Talmud Chacham? You spend so many years learning. You spend so many years working on yourself. And what are you? Where are you? Therefore, says the Chabina Rav, that's what the Medrash means over here. A Talmud Chacham She'en Bo Deya, if it doesn't change, if nothing changes in his personality, in his Mahalach HaChaim, in the way he goes about doing business, in the way he goes about greeting people and dealing with people, then Afilu Nevela Tov Ha'imenu, he's worthless. There's no hope for such a person. So, the Torah, in fact, has the power to transform us. That's what we see over here. This is what Rosh Hashanah is all about. That Tshuva can transform us. We can transform ourselves. And we just have to take the story of the Chafetz Chaim to heart and the story of the Rav Shimon Shkop, that all we have to do is want it. But not just want it. We have to follow through and make sure we come up with some sort of plan to follow through. We ask the Ribbono Shel Olam for so many things and he's ready to give it to us. Just he finds that we're not serious about it. It's just like the usher who sees that the poor man is not really serious about the commitments that he's asking the usher to make for him, because he doesn't show up, he doesn't follow up on his conversations that he has with him. So that's just an idea about maybe why these Gedolim had a strong insistence not to use the melach, but to use the salt on Rosh Hashanah. And I wish everybody a ksiva v'chasima tova. This was the last year in this series.